it's time for the End of Conversation podcast with funny man Damian Lemon and the voice of your choice, Ali Muhammad.
This is Damian Lemon, and this is In the Conversation, the podcast. Yes, 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 we are back. Ali is away. He'll be back soon. Shout out to Muhammad. But in the meantime, in between time, it is you and I, you know, chilling, kicking it. How y'all doing? Okay. Well, that's good to hear. I'm glad to hear things are shaping up. Things are getting better. Last week, I was a little worried. But now all is well. It's back to being cold out here in New York. We had a crazy heat wave. Not a heat wave. It was just a shimmy. We had a heat shimmy. You had 2 days in the good 80s, damn near high 80s. It was almost on the way to sweltering. I thought we had fully turned the corner, but now we back to the 40s. Yeah, I don't know what's going on. Mother Nature is quite indecisive, but let her do her thing. It is what it is. I will keep these hoodies on standby. Which, yeah, y'all feel good. It was this past week was a busy week. I'm not even gonna lie to you, yo. I'm tired. I'm super tired. I was about to say super tired, expialidocious, but you know, yeah, I was mad tired. I had a lot of shows this past week. Matter of fact, that's why last week I had to run it short. I had to run out the crib, do a spot, ran through Comedy in Harlem. Did a spot on Chris Spencer's show. That was cool. Got to kick it with him, chop it up with him, had a good set. That shit was cool. The people was in there. So that was a nice little vibe. Then that next day, shout out to Milford, Connecticut. I went to that Milford Arts Council. We had a little blast. You know what I'm saying? Shout out to the people that came on through. You know what I'm saying? It was cool. It was good times, man. Shout out to John at the Mac, Page, you know, some of the people that put it all together. It was a good time. I had a nice time. It was fun. Nice venue. Really nice venue. I would definitely go back there. I like how it was set up. It was cool. On my way back, though, I guess I was in such a hurry to get back home. I didn't realize. Maybe it's these new tires. I'm not sure. But I didn't realize I was moving and grooving. I looked down at my speedometer, and I was at 100. I was at 100, and I didn't even feel it. So I said, oh, I'm bugging out. Let me chill. So I go there. I decelerate, you know, and I'm driving a little bit. Next thing you know, I see flashing lights in my rear view. I said, oh, hell no. Nah. I look at my speedometer, it's about 65. So I'm like, okay. I pull over. Officer comes to the side of the car. Came to the passenger side, because I guess we was on the highway. It makes sense. Came to the passenger side of the car. And I'm like, hey, man, what's going on? He said, you know how fast you was going? I said, well, I looked at my speedometer, it said 65. I'm fiending ignorance. He's like, yeah. Well, I was following you for a quarter mile, and you was at about 82. I said, oh, okay. Oh, man. So he said, where you coming from? I said, I'm coming from a show up in, you know, Milford. He said, oh, okay. Let me get your license and registration. I'm like, oh, yeah. I'm sick because I'm like, first of all, I haven't been pulled over for speeding in a very long time. I'm typically good with that. You know, I'm typically good with that. I don't think I'm a reckless driver, to be totally honest with you. But I do want to ask, how many of y'all really go to speed limit? You know, because sometimes you're the fast lady, you just try to keep with the flow of traffic. And nobody in the flow of traffic is going to speed, and you know, the speed limit. I guess that's over there in the right lane. But in the, you know, the left lane, we living different, you know. But anyway. I was a little tight because I just finished this defensive driving course to get the premium down on my, you know what? I don't even know if I should be, well, anyway, to get the premium down on my car insurance. And, actually this whole story is hypothetical. If them good people at the drive, you know, the insurance people's listening, but anyway, The officer comes back, and he's like, so where'd you go? I told him where I went. He's like, where's that at? It's downtown. I said, I don't know. It's right by the railroad, you know? He was like, well, you should have taken a train. I said, come on, bro. If you're going to give me a ticket, let's not make this insult to injury, you know? I said, are you about to give me a ticket? He said, nah, I'm going to give you an official warning. I said, oh, okay. And he told me how much the ticket would have cost and how many points that ticket would have hit me for. And he said, I'm going to give you a warning. If you get pulled over, you're going to get a ticket immediately. You know? So I said, yo, good looking out. I said, yo, can I give you a pound? I can't have you a pound. Yo, peace. Shout out to Colby. Officer Colby looked out for your boy. So that was good. That was a nice little reprieve, you know, because I was like, damn, I was sick. But we made it home safely, you know, with no ticket, and it felt good. But y'all, drive safe out there. You know what I'm saying? Drive safe. As a matter of fact, if you're listening to this in your whip, take a second and look at your speedometer. See what's what. Speaking of that, though, I got a question. Because, you know, I use Google Maps to travel oftentimes, even though sometimes I've been thinking about not doing that because allegedly they tracking you and whatever. Who ain't tracking you, right? And that's just something I got to shake. But two things. When you do go above the speed limit, it makes those numbers red, which kind of makes you like, oh, no. But then also, you know, like, I know, like, early on when you used to use Waze, Waze would be like, yo, cops, speed cam, you know, all of that. They give you the intel. Now Google is starting to do that or has started to do that. But I'm not sure if Google is really on my side. Sometimes I'm wondering if Google is working with them people. You know what I'm saying? You know, like, is it a setup? Waze felt like they were a little bit more honorable. Maybe just because I don't know how big a corporation Waze is. Maybe Waze might have been bought silently by Google. Who knows? But anyway, you know me. I'm rambling. I was looking on this internet over this week. I see they selling oxtail at IHOP. That don't even make any sense. Oxtail at IHOP is ridiculous. I don't even understand what's going on with that at all. I haven't been to IHOP in a minute. I used to like IHOP. I was a big fan of the Rudy Tooty Fresh and Fruity, you know, because it was a good bang for your buck, a whole lot of, you know, just everything. What was it, pancakes with some compote, you know what I mean? I probably do like a blueberry or maybe a peach, but typically a blueberry. Some pancakes, I think it came with bacon. Might have came with bacon and sausage. I think two eggs. And something else, but it was like, oh, it was a lot. It'd be like $7 or whatever, you know. And then, I don't know, one day I went to the IHOP. I remember when IHOP opened up in Harlem. And, yeah, I remember when IHOP opened up in Harlem and it was like down the block from where I lived. I was so excited because IHOP was kind of a thing that was like in the suburbs and on the road. You know, funny enough, like New York City is getting a lot of these like big box stores and these certain eateries that were like mythological to the city. You know, these are the things you had to go on the road. You had to go down south or you had to go yonder. You know what I'm saying? To see a Bojangles or to go see even the Chick-fil-A. I remember the only Chick-fil-A was at NYU in their cafeteria. That was the only one. 7-Eleven, things like that. Like there's stuff like that that's just like popping up all over. Like it's bugged out. So I remember like when IHOP came, I was like, what? IHOP? And then I remember going into IHOP and I seen like a lot of people that may have been addled with diabetes to the point where, like, maybe they don't have both feet and they, like, really, really, really obese in, like, a motorized wheelchair. You know what I'm saying? Maybe some people in there with it was just depressing. It was like the depressing side of the casino. You know, when you think about a casino, you think about high rollers, you think about people well-dressed and, you know what I'm saying, having a flute of champagne and a beautiful woman on their arm, or you know what I mean, or if you're a woman, like a just a amazing gown, and you know, maybe some Frank Sinatra, something playing, something very elevated. But when you go to the, you go hit that floor in the casino, and you look over by them slot machines, and you see these people with them damn wheelable oxygen tanks, you know, still, you know, taking puffs of oxygen and then taking puffs of a fucking Virginia Slim, you're like, ah, you know, it ain't as ideal as you thought it was. And I seen that in IHOP one day, and I was like, ah, it kind of harshed my mellow, you know? That was kind of the reason, and I may even got like a glimpse of one of the kitchen somehow. Some places you don't want to get a glimpse of that kitchen. There's plenty of places that I will eat at that I just do not want to see behind that curtain. Just bring me my food. As a matter of fact, keep the lid closed. You know what I'm saying? I'll crack it when I get to the house. But anyway, yeah, so like long story short, I kind of stopped messing with IHOP because I think, you know, some of the eggs might even be fake. They might use powdered eggs for the scrambled eggs or whatever. It's a whole lot. So long story long, I don't understand how IHOP has incorporated oxtail into the menu in a way that is going to be in line with the integrity of good oxtail. Now, if you know me and you listen to this podcast for a while, I have said for a long time, oxtail is definitely a wild card delicacy. Delicacy. Yeah, I said it the first time. It's a wild card meat. Again, I'm not going to say it, but it's a wild card meat. You know, sometimes it's a lot of cartilage and bone. Sometimes it's like a lot of meat. Sometimes it's like, okay, this is a real deal, but you never know. You never know. It's never as hearty as it could be for the price point. But anyway, long story longer. I forget what the menu items are. Let me look at this. I know it's like a breakfast burrito, I believe. Let me see what's going on. And I've seen people kind of talking about it. And they saying it, I seen one video, the person was like, yo, it's good. I don't know. I see them eating it. It didn't look like they were paid by the people. It's an oxtail omelet, oxtail chopped cheese, come on, and oxtail tacos. Developed by a local chef to reflect Bronx culture. So I guess this is just straight for the Bronx. Bronx locations only. Okay, the Fordham location, Bruckner, Cross Bronx, Riverdale, and Allerton locations. Oh, all right. Interesting. That kind of quietly makes me say, all right, maybe. Because if you spreading that oxtail nationwide, I know it's getting cut. You know what I'm saying? I know y'all stepping on that oxtail. But if you just keeping it up in that, you know, that one borough, you know what I'm saying? That one little, that's real. That is some micro geo targeted oxtail deployment. So anyway, I seen a video and the cat, him and his lady, they went and they were eating it and they looked convincing. They looked like they was enjoying it. I don't know if I'm bold enough to have any IHOP oxtail. I don't know if I want to do that. It just feels like I can't blame nobody when it wasn't what it was supposed to be. You know what you're getting yourself into. You know what I'm saying? Go to Fish and Ting. You know what I'm saying? If you up that way, go over there. Go get you some good oxtail over there. Like, it's not necessary for oxtail chopped cheese or oxtail tacos, you know, from IHOP. But you let me know if you bold enough to go or if you have gone. Let me know. Jump in the comments. Tell me. Defend, you know, corporate oxtail. Let me know. Also, spinning this internet, I've noticed that there has started to become some backlash on, I guess, the girl boss of the moment, Emma Greed. I don't even know if girl boss is still a term. I still see it applied out here. And these are women, but, you know, the girl boss, that's the archetype or whatever. But just women getting money in business and hitting you with the you can do it, too. Now, is it a grift or is it inspiration? It's always a slippery slope. I've seen a few of her interviews prior to the backlash. And, you know, I dig her delivery. You know what I'm saying? It's not bad. It's cool. It's well packaged, you know. But one of the biggest things that I seen is her thing about work from home. You know, her thing is it's an attack on the WFH. You know, all the people that work remotely or even on the hybrid tip. She made a point to say, listen, you will not prosper if you do not go to the office, and the people are not feeling that, amongst other things. But that seems to be like the real, that seems to be one of the real button pushers. Like, people are not feeling that. And it's always interesting when you're seeing like a new personality break to the critical mass level and you see that first wave of blowback come crashing down. And there's the moment, like, are you gonna survive this onslaught of negative opinion or people just discovering you and not feeling you? If you could survive that, you could surf it all the way out. You know what I mean? You could surf that shit back out to your cabana. Get yourself an Aperol spritz and chill. So stay tuned. I'm just looking at the internet sometime and seeing what I see. I don't know. This might get existential. Nah, I don't even. I got faith and momentum under my topics. I don't even know where I'm going with this. I just know, and I've been saying it right now, particularly, this is resilience season, right? This is where you got to really dig your heels into whatever it is you're doing. You know, like, really get your focus really, like, on a tunnel vision level. Don't be distracted by the nonsense or the doom and the gloom, because right now it's a lot of doom and gloom propaganda. Things do not look good. Things are not good, you know. But there is hope. There's daylight. You know, there's moments of daylight. Even little slivers of sunlight could keep you going. And, you know, it's really so much about locking in and being faithful to whatever plan you got. And trust in the momentum you make, and even if it feels incremental. Like, you know, you got time on the clock, the game is still going. So that's really the thought right there. You know, I don't have anything anymore. You know what I'm saying? That might have just been 32 bars of motivation, but it was just on my heart, as they say. You know, something that I wrote. It was just like one of those things. It's just, and it's not giving up, you know, not giving up. It's just something, stick it to somewhat of a routine. You know, for me, sometimes I don't even really invite people in for accountability. You know what I'm saying? You could go from accountability to op quick. Fuck is you talking about? Who are you? You know what I'm saying? Who are you holding accountable? I ain't asked for this. You actually did ask for this. Oh, okay. But listen. Don't worry about what I'm doing. Long story short, you got to be your own accountability partner. If you want to extend that and put that outside of somebody else, then that's cool. But just know that when they call you and hold you accountable, don't look at them like they the police. You know what I'm saying? But I say that to say there's things that I've been doing recently. Like, I've been working out every day. You know what I'm saying? It's simple. Little calisthenic workout, you know, something at the crib. I still got that gym membership. I ain't been in a minute. I need to get back. But I have been locking in for over a month now consistently every day, right? And I'm not going to lie to you. Every day when I go to start the workout, I'm like, shh. It take me a couple minutes to, like, because this is not who I am, you know? But it's just kind of like, well, I made the commitment to myself. But there is a part of me that's like, is this the day where I don't do it? Is this the day where I give up on what I'm trying to do? And then I power through whatever I need to do, and I feel good on the opposite side of it, you know? But it's like all these years with myself, You know what I'm saying? There's still times where you like, come on, you still gotta, you gotta train yourself to surprise yourself. You know what I'm saying? Not let yourself off the hook. Cause you know, again, like if you're holding yourself accountable and you're the only accountability partner you have, and you let yourself off the hook and you comfortable with just being upset with yourself, you know, and you know how long that, you know, that little remorse or that, you know, beating yourself up will last, and you could kind of power through that, it's going to be what it's going to be. But I'm just trying to I don't even like saying lock in because it's been commodified. That's turned it to just fucking like light in the ass slang. It's just some shit that just people just say that don't even mean what it used to mean. But yeah, it's just something I wanted to kind of expound on. I'm not trying to be woo woo Johnny. You know what I'm saying? I'm still a cynical motherfucker. You know what I mean? But at the same time, as cynical as I could be or skeptical as I could be, I still be trying to change my life every day. I'm still not in a transformative way, but just in a evolving way, trying to be better, you know, reading books and trying to apply different methods and, you know, all of that type of thing. And also being accepting of certain things and, you know, all of that. But, I don't know. I had it written down. And as opposed to just not talking about it, I was like, well, let me just ramble through the idea of what, at some point this week, I was just like, let me add that to the topics. So, you know, take that, do with it what you want. That repost button on Instagram is tricky. It's a tricky situation. I'm not saying Chili is not MAGA, but that defense, I kind of had a little bit of empathy for it because I have fallen victim for pressing that repost button unbeknownst to me. I came back to the crib a couple days ago, and for whatever reason, for some odd reason, I said, let me look at my profile, see what's up with this repost situation. Or matter of fact, I saw that the repost button, the icon was available on my profile. That if you somebody that don't really repost, it goes away. Or it used to go away. Now it ain't going away. It's sitting there. I don't know if it's like an emoji. You know, if you use an emoji that you don't use for a long time, that emoji is in your recently used or most used emojis for a while. And then it kind of just falls off. But I reposted a shapely woman that I didn't even know. I didn't remember seeing the content. I just said, yo, what's this? I said, oh. And then I'm like, yo, how long has this been up here? You know what I mean? Listen, I love a good shapely woman, but I'm not replatforming it for the world. You know what I'm saying? That's my own private desire. Anyway, I was like, yo, what's going on? I didn't mean to repost this. So I had to unrepost it. Shout out to homegirl. I couldn't even find it on my little watch history. That shit didn't even pop up. So I don't even know who it was or where it went. But ever since then, I got a little repost button PTSD. I be checking the repost button like the stove and the iron. Make sure that the iron ain't on or the stove ain't, the gas is not leaking. I won't say justice for Chili because it sounds like she is kind of on the little MAGA movement. But I do understand that repost button is tricky. I'm sure I'm not the only person. Have you reposted something that you didn't mean to repost? And if so, what was it? It wasn't embarrassing. Because that's the other thing. You're like, oh. Like, people are like, oh. Because that's how it happens. Sometimes you're looking at it, you're like, yo, what's this? And then you see who reposted it. You're like, oh, wow, that's what they into? On the music front, I've been messing with that new Yaya Bae album, Fidelity. I really like it. I like it a lot. You know, I've talked about her on the pod quite a bit. And this is her latest offering. I like it. I like it a lot. I'm still kind of sitting with it. But my first thought was like the production has kind of beefed up a little bit. I heard her in an interview saying, like, you know, since she's been touring, she's been working with, like, actual, you know, musicians, jazz musicians, just musicians, people that play instruments, and you could kind of hear it. Like, the sound is a lot more robust. The pen is still ill. And, yeah, I'm rocking what I was listening to. I was going to go check her at the Awake store. She had a performance, but actually I had a show at the same time, so I got to get that shmini. And so I didn't make it to that. I had to go get paid. But, and you know, entertain the people, of course. But the next day I went down to the Hannah Traore Gallery. Shout out to Hannah and them. But it was a talk with Roxanne Shante, Yaya Bey, moderated by Clover Hope. That was a good, real good shop up. Obviously, her father's granddaddy, IU, who was down with the Juice Crew. And I didn't know that he wrote, you know, rhymes for Roxanne Shante. She actually said it. Maybe not all her rhymes, but definitely a couple songs or whatever. But, like, the way that Roxanne talks about the Juice Crew says very familial. Like, they still locked in. They look at each other as brothers and sisters and all of that. And, so she look at Yaya as like her little, you know, like her little niece or whatever. She call her Muffin, you know what I mean? So it was kind of like the conversation was, it was a real like pointed kind of personal conversation, a good gist of it. It almost felt like we were eavesdropping on some old family shit, you know? It was wisdom, but it was also couched within love and support and protection, you know? And, it was dope. It was dope. I thought Clover did a really good job at moderating it, you know, setting up nice questions where they could kind of go. They could kind of, you know, I don't say meander, but they could expound and they could speak freely and like just kind of move in whatever direction kind of served the purpose. I thought both sides of the conversation were really dope. It was a question that Clover said, like, someone from your generation, what would you tell someone from her generation and vice versa? And it was like, it was deep. It wasn't like, you know, the cliche shit that you kind of hear at a lot of these little panels. Like it was like really, it was deep. It was substantial. So I checked that out. That was cool. After that, and just while we still on the music side of things. So that came out this past weekend. That was good. Also, Emmanuel Wilkins dropped a joint live from the Village Vanguard. This is the part two. He dropped one a couple weeks ago. You know, I've been rocking with him. I seen him at the Village Vanguard. This might even been from one of them shows. But, like, on the jazz, so I'm not even Johnny Jazz like that, but I think maybe it was because I seen him live. Like, I rock with his music, you know. Like, I even, like, when I'm listening to some jazz shit, I could get into it, so... Those are some projects to check out. But lastly, on the music tip, I seen the young man Aubrey Graham has announced the release date for the Iceman as May 15th. May 15th, 515. But what I thought was really fly about it, listen, I thought it was fly. I thought it was a cool little activation. Album's Iceman. He been doing these little funny little promo gimmicks, whether it's like icing out, you know, or freezing two courtside seats at the Raptors game. He created this whole huge structure that was just built out of nothing but ice blocks. Not like an igloo, but just like a huge, just, yeah, it's like a big ass structure of just a bunch of slabs and bricks of ice, frozen ice, and within there was the album release date. So it was a cool album release date. I saw somebody say this nigga having a gender reveal for his album release. I thought that was kind of funny. But I say this, man, it's been a minute, man. It's been a Drake void, whatever, however you feel about him, you know, in the wake of the battle, in the wake of more so the lawsuits and all of that, you know, weird ass behavior. I didn't like the lawsuit movements. Losing the battle was enough. I wasn't even mad at losing the battle, even though I think the kid tapped out a little too early. But I'm ready to see what he gonna talk about, and I hope that he like really go in. I hope he ain't sulking a lot on the album. I'm curious to hear what he talking about, and this is his first album back outside. You know, he had the shit with Party, but I'm talking about as a Drake album. This is his first offering since, you know, shit went left for the kid, and I'm excited. I'm excited to hear it. I want to see what it is, and it's his season. You know, it should be decidedly warm by the 15th of May. Hopefully we ain't still dilly-dallying with the temperatures. But, you know, Drake is good for the summer and he good for the fall. I mean, he got joints for all types of seasons. But, like, summertime, he might have something. So we're going to see. I'm excited about it. And I don't think I'm in the minority. I don't even think the age of the reluctant Drake fan, I think that's kind of falling off. I think people are starting to be like, nah, let's get to it. Let's get to it. Let's have a good time. You know what I'm saying? Let's have a good time. Let's enjoy. We outside. Let's get some outside score. Let's get some musical accompaniment to this feral ass summer. I think this summer is going to be a feral summer, especially for the real deal singles. You know, coming up off of that freeze and that heavy diesel ass winter, especially in the Northeast. Oh, it's gonna be crazy. You know, and then, you know, politically, we had war and all of this. It's a lot. I think people are gonna be like, you know what? I'm going crazy. I'm going hard out here. Just do it responsibly. Don't get crazy. Don't get violent. Don't you know what I'm saying? Don't kill the vibe, literally and figuratively. Like, please, you know what I'm saying? Have a good time. Let's not get stupid. Let's bug out. But let's not go dumb. Anyway, so I'm excited for that. We'll talk about Euphoria in a second. I was watching earlier today. I was watching a couple episodes of Funny AF, the new Kevin Hart comedy competition show on Netflix. Now, generally, I am not a fan of comedy competitions. I am not. I do comedy. I'm a comedian for 20 years now, and I don't like it. Comedy is subjective. You know, some people think is funny, other people might not. You know, you find your audience, you build your path. So I hate the competitive element of it, the stakes and all of that. It, you know, the drama, the manufactured drama of it all. It kind of is just, I don't like it. I don't like that, typically. I like this so far, though, because it doesn't feel so much like people doing things that is outside of comedy. This still feels more like, it feels like a showcase show with the wrapped in the wrapped as like a competition show. Obviously, some people aren't advancing and all of that, but I think it does, from what I'm only two episodes in, but what I see, it showcases a lot of like new and upcoming comedians. It showcases a wide variety of comedy styles. I believe that it is good, or at least interesting critique. You know, and I haven't seen any feedback yet, but like critique of acts and like, maybe not even just critique, but like, like good comedy analysis. You know what I'm saying? Like, just, you know, it's insightful analysis. It's not always about the critique of it all. It's not even a whole lot of that. It's a decent amount, but it's more so, oh, I see what they did there. I like how they did that. That was an interesting technique. Did you see how that was? Oh, that joke was funny, or blah, blah, blah. It's not light on the, you shouldn't do this, which so far I appreciate. Again, I'm only two episodes in. Full disclosure, especially as far as the New York comics go, I know quite a few of them, worked with a lot of them, so you know, I'm definitely rooting for them. And then you know, I'm curious to see where it goes. And you know, I think it's a nice platform again to showcase new comic talent, and whoever wins will get a Netflix special. So that's what's up. I was just thinking about this just as on my way. I went grocery shopping today, so I'm on my way back to the crib. And prior to jumping in the whip, I put together a little playlist based on records that I had heard over the weekend. I was actually listening to some like online radio. I think I was listening to NTS. I want to say it's NTS radio. I was listening to the Tim Hotep interview with Yahya Bey, and then it went into like another DJ, and they was like, they were playing all types of vibes, and then another DJ, and they did like a whole Sa-Ra set. I've been rocking with Sa-Ra for a long time. I like their joints. And so I looked at the little track list, and I put it on a playlist. I'm driving to it. I was like, yeah, this is rocking. You know how you hear something you ain't heard in a minute? And then, you know, I'm Dola, I'm in the whip, but there was a moment where I was thinking about, you know, love languages. You always hear about, you know, sometimes you're dating or whatever. You just hear people say, what's your love language? You know, what's that? Gary Chapman, I think, is the person that created that. And I think there's five. I don't even know them all off the top of the head. And I was like, what, acts of service? Let me see. Let me look this up while we're here. And then I'm going to give you I'm gonna give you my take on this whole thing. But five love languages. Gary Chapman. Okay, so it's five distinct, a popular book that explains how people express and receive love in five distinct ways. Words of affirmation, acts of service, receiving gifts, quality time, and physical touch, right? Now, who don't like none of them? You know, maybe you might like one more than the other, but who don't like, give me the deluxe, you know what I'm saying? Fully loaded. Give me everything, all the bells and the whistles. I don't want to be, well, I'm not going to say I don't want to be, you know, I could be quite skeptical, quite cynical, a bit of a curmudgeon. I've said this before, I think the five love languages, I mean, I love how it has like buried itself into the zeitgeist for a while now, and damn near, in, you know, into almost, I don't, you know, it's almost, yeah, it's almost like, I don't say a DSM because that don't make no sense, but it's looked at as like a real theory as opposed to, in my mind, marketing. You know what I'm saying? It's just another smooth, it's one of the best ways to market love in the last 20 years. You know what I'm saying? And love gets romanticized and marketed in ways that are so deep because people want love. A lot of people want love. Most people want love, want some romance, want to be with somebody. You know what I'm saying? All of that. So there's so many ways. There's so many waves, and I'm not going to say grifting, but there's so many waves that develop in the sector of love and you know, love, INC. You know what I'm saying? So, like, you know, without dissing it, you know, I mean, if you participate in the five love languages, that's what's up, for sure. I mean, who don't like love, right? But I do, I sometimes I feel it as, it's a play. You know what I mean? It's a play. Whoever, Gary, when he cooked this up, I don't even know. Sometimes when you cook something up, you know, whatever it is, whatever idea, whatever theory, whatever scheme you got, you know, wherever you at in your world. But you know, there's a moment when you, even if it's an outfit, when you cook something up, there's that moment where you kind of do a little bit of a, you kind of pace your apartment a little bit. You got to, oh, wait till they see this. Ooh, I got some heat. You know what I mean? That discovery, that moment, that epiphany, that, yeah, we about to kill him. I don't know if Gary had that moment, but he definitely smacked him. He smacked him. You know what I'm saying? Like this, that love languages is one of them. It is in the firmament of intimacy, at least the last, from 2000, I don't even know when it came out. You know what I mean? Oh, it came out in 1992. That's interesting because I didn't even hear about it until maybe the last 10, 15 years. So maybe it was a slow burn. It was a slow burn. I mean, I was late to the love languages. Long story short, I was thinking about it on my way back from the grocery store. And I was like, one of my love languages is being in the whip or even at the crib playing songs for a girl. And she's like, ooh, what's that?
That's why shit. That's why love language. Oh, you don't know this? This such and such. Oh, what? Ah, this is that. You put me on to such and such? Yeah, you knew. That's it. I love that. I love that shit. Even if they fake it. Even if they fake it. Even if I find out later on, she telling the homegirl, I had to act like I ain't know who Salt was. Or Cyrock. This nigga thought he was putting me on. Oh, DJ, let me play something new. You know what I'm saying? Anyway, I remember one time this chick, I was playing something. I was playing a record, and shorty tried to, like, skip the record. She pressed the wrong button. She tried to skip the record. I was like, oh, hell no. That's when I knew it was trouble in paradise. You know you don't touch a black man's radio. You don't touch a black woman's radio. You don't touch nobody's radio. You could express your disapproval. Your disapproval. Hey, ew, I don't like this record. You know what I'm saying? Let the DJ do what the DJ do. But for you to, you know what I mean, hop on the tables. Come on now. Come on now. I also remember one time giving this one girl an aux. This is the last time I got a speeding ticket. I gave this girl an aux, and she was playing some bullshit. Some bullshit. I would say some of the artists, but I don't want to disrespect nobody, but it was some bullshit. I think that's why I got the speeding ticket. I was trying to get my ass home because I was tired of listening to this shit. I was like, let her live, but I need to get back because I cannot stand this shit. I don't even think the speeding ticket was for me. I think the cops somehow on the radar heard the bullshit being played via the aux in my whip. It was like, yo, nah, this can't stand. We got to shut this down. We'll call it a speeding ticket, but honestly, it's a noise violation. Anyway, that's my love language, though. I saw this movie this week. I went to, not the premiere, but the second, I guess the premiere weekend, this movie called Mad Bills to Pay. I liked it. It's dope. It's like an indie movie. Mad Bills to Pay is an indie movie that is directed by a new director. This is his first feature, Joel Alfonso Vargas. It's like a, I don't know if I call it a, I guess kind of a love story. What the log line say here? It says, summer in the Bronx. He sells nutcracker cocktails, gets high, stays moving. Then she moves in. Two kids in a cramped apartment playing house until the city reminds them how fast the streets make you grow up. That's a succinct, gives you the spirit of it. It reminds me, as far as the look and the feel spiritually a little bit, it reminds me of like Raising Victor Vargas a little bit, but this is Dominicans in the Bronx. I don't think Victor Vargas might have been Puerto Ricans in the Low East Side, but it's very New York, though. It's a very New York story. It's real familiar. It's well acted. I think both the leads, I'm not sure if they were new. The leads are Rico and Destiny. Rico is played by Juan Collado, and Destiny is played by Destiny Chico. They killed it. To round out the cast is Johanna Florentino, who played the mother, and Natalie Navarro, who played Sally, Rico's sister. And she's also in Brownsville Bred, which I started watching. That's on Tubi. I started watching that just recently. So she's out here getting to it. But I really enjoyed it. I saw that Film Forum. I think it's showing that Film Forum for a bit. And I think it's showing also somewhere in the Bronx. I want to say in Baychester or something like that. I'm not sure. But I know for sure it's showing at the Film Forum. And I went to the screening where the director came in and did like a talk back at the end. And, you know, it was pretty cool. He gave some insight on making the movie and whatever. One of the biggest things about it was the lead, the cat that played Rico, Juan, they had to replace the lead that they were going to go with like 3 days before they shot. And they put Juan in there. And I mean, after hearing it, after watching it, because I heard this is a talkback, so I heard that after watching it, Dog, I couldn't even see nobody. Like, he owned that role. He killed that shit. Like, it was a really good movie. I think I really appreciate it. Like I said, it reminds me of spiritually and how it looks. It reminds me of like Raising Victor Vargas, and also just kind of thematically and what's going on in there. It reminds me a little bit of Baby Boy, you know. And I told somebody that, and they kind of, you know what I mean, like. I think people got to put some respect on Baby Boy's name. I know it's like been, it used to be ubiquitous on BET, but like, shit, that might be John Singleton's second best film. I'd have to sit and think about that. I still, Baby Boy's in the Hood's number one. And I would have to look at John Singleton's filmography, because I'm kind of talking, you know, straight out the sphincter in this moment. But Baby Boy was a good movie, you know. It was good for what it was, and it kind of has a little bit of that vibe in the way of, and I don't want to give you no real spoilers, but if you kind of know what the gist of Baby Boy was, that you could kind of see a little bit of the gist of what's going on in Mad Bills to Pay. Two totally different films. But there is a little underline for me. And it was one of the things, I didn't ask the guy any questions, but I'm curious if he's seen that, if that was an influence or whatever. But long story short, if you get a chance, you know, especially if you're in New York, and then if it comes to streaming at some point, go check out Mad Bills to Pay. And shout out to the Film Forum. I haven't been in the Film Forum in a while, but I like it as a movie theater. It's a dope independent movie theater. It's been around for, shit, 50 years? Something like that. Probably more than 50 years, I believe. And it's something to be said about curation and presentation. You know, like, I just actually threw out the little, what they got coming up. But, like, they got Crooklyn coming up next week and, you know, various things, stuff that you could probably, you know, you could see on DVD, Blu-ray, streaming or whatever, but like, and then things that you might not be able to see. And, you know, they put it up. I think there's something about curation. You know what I'm saying? Like I was just talking about earlier, listening to NTS radio. I wish I knew the DJ that was spinning. I'm trying to find out the DJ that kind of put that little, what you call it, together, that playlist together. He was rocking. He was rocking. You know, it was Tim O'Tap that did that. But anyway, yeah. You know, like, yeah, man, when people serve up things in a way that is, you know, appreciative, like that, you know, like just somebody knowing how to put things together and saying, yo, if you like that, you're like this. You know, that I think that the Film Forum has a lot of that. And truth be told, they got a good ass concession stand. Well priced. Not no AMC foolishness, $12 for medium popcorn. Like, prices are crazy. And then it's like, since it's a small spot, like they selling like good pieces of cake. You know what I'm saying? Like, It's a nice little spot. It's a nice little spot. I hadn't been in a long time, and I enjoyed it. So if you're in New York, for sure, go check that out. That's a good little night. That's a good little something to do. Yeah, I think it's about that time. Let's get into this Euphoria. Let us get into Euphoria. Season 3, Episode 2, America, My Dream. I didn't even realize last week Sharon Stone was in the episode, you know, playing the playing Lexi's boss. I didn't realize that Alamo was at a BC from Oz. I seen this cat from somewhere. I even said, yo, he looked familiar. I don't know him from where, whatever, whatever. That's at a BC. That's the original T.I. hat. You know, it's funny. I know that Addie BC used to wear the hat. I don't think I ever saw Oz. I might have seen one or two episodes. I never saw Oz, the whole thing. I don't know. Maybe it was because I didn't want to see motherfuckers in jail.
I don't know what it was. I know it was a phenomenon. I heard it was a really good show. It's a couple of them HBO. That in that era, shows that I didn't see. Like, I didn't see Oz. I didn't see True Blood. There's probably a couple more of them. But, like, yeah, shout out to Adebisi, you know, and Sharon Stone. I didn't even catch it. Sam Levinson directed and wrote this. Allegedly, I believe he wrote and directed this entire season. So, consistent thematically for better or worse. I want to say it opens up with Rue working. Now she's working at the brothel. I forget the name of the brothel. Was it the Silver Slipper or something like that? She's working at the brothel. And she's doing grunt work. She's not working for Lori anymore. They made a trade. Alamo called up Lori and informed her, listen, you have some fentanyl in the pills. Lori was like, nah, not us. Like, nah, one of our women died, and we're taking Rue from you. She's like, Rue owe me money. He's like, well, listen, you killed one of my workers, so I'm taking one of your workers. She got mad. She just called him a pig. You're a pig. He got very triggered by that. He was not feeling being called a pig. I like what they're trying to do with, like, this Alamo character and even the character of G. Is that G that's being played by Marshawn Lynch? G, not as much Bishop. Bishop is kind of right down the middle, but, like, Alamo is kind of, like, quirky and sensitive about certain weird shit, you know, for him to be, like, a pimp, you know, like somebody that's running a brothel. You know, you would think he was just a little bit more player. You know what I'm saying? Not like kind of neurotic about the weirdest shit. So that's kind of funny. They got Big Eddie, the Big Eddie character, who's kind of, I guess he's the guy with all of, like, the supplies. He's definitely the guy that's doling out the money. He's like almost like, I don't want to say HR, or he's like the office manager. So he's doling out all of the drugs. He's paying all of the girls. You know, he's the guy. He's the mainframe. That's being played by Kadeem Hardison. So that's kind of cool. And this is the second time that Kadeem Hardison and Zendaya have worked together. I believe Kadeem Hardison played her father or something like that on one of them early Disney shows back in the days. So this is kind of like a cool little reunion. Speaking of Zendaya, there's a good article that Doreen St. Felix wrote in The New Yorker about Zendaya that's really good. If you get a chance, check that out. Look it up. It's just Doreen St. Felix, Zendaya, and it'll come up. But it was deep. It kind of spoke to, like, what we talked about, I talked about with, like, the drama and just some of the characters that she's playing and blah, 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 blah. It's pretty interesting. Anyway, so we in there. We kicking it off. We seeing that. Seeing that Rue is just, like, just working odd jobs. She's just, you know, it ain't as fly as she thought it was going to be. You know, she's doing grunt work. She's at the bottom of the barrel. If there was a mailroom equivalent to a whorehouse, she is working in the mailroom, right? So she's cleaning toilets. You know, she is cleaning just vomit. Like, she's doing all types of things. But she's also the person that's, like, you know, moving the drugs around to the strippers when they got to play and all of this type of thing. So it's interesting. You also see Rosalia. She makes a cameo. She's in there wearing, like, a neck brace. Somehow she didn't hurt her neck. She don't want to take a neck brace off to go on the floor. She want to go on the floor with a neck brace. Big Eddie is like, yo, you better take that shit off or we going to fire you. There's also this girl named Angel, played by Priscilla Delgado, who's another stripper, and she's like a hothead. She's a wild card, right? So she is tripping because, what was the girl's name? Ty? What was the stripper that died? The dancer that died in the last episode. The dancer that died in the last episode that overdosed off the fentanyl. That was Priscilla's friend, maybe her girl. So Priscilla's like, yo, where's she at? Nobody, because, oh, whoa, 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 whoa. Actually, let me start again. not only is Rue doing grunt work, Rue had to make sure that she kind of erased all trace of this fallen dancer. Let me find her name real quick. Hold on a second. I can't find this girl's name. I forget her name. But long story short, the girl, she overdosed. And Rue had to take all the stuff and burn it and basically leave no trace that this girl even existed. Angel, she not letting up. She's like, yo, I know she wouldn't dip, because that's what they saying, that she ran off with a dude. I think the term was like, yo, she fell in love, you know, which is kind of, I mean, obviously falling in love is falling in love, but I think it might be like in that line of work, falling in love is, you know, it's almost career suicide. It's like it was bound to happen. It happens sometimes and she's gone. She's in the wind, you know, but Angel just don't believe it. And she is, she's bugging, you know, she's bugging out. She's throwing shoes, the whole thing. So long story short, Rue tells her, surprisingly, I'm surprised she, you know, let her know. She told her, like, yeah, she OD'd. She's like, what? So now Angel is bugging out. Oh, this is interesting. There was a moment like Rue loved the ladies, right? So Angel kind of caught Rue's eye. She gave Angel, I think, some Molly or whatever to do with a customer. And then at the end of the shift, Angel was like, yo, I still got some Molly left trying to party. So they wound up in the van going crazy. And I guess Rue is not sober. There was a thought that Rue was sober, but I guess she still dibble dabbles. You know, she was I realized in the first episode, she's, you know, California sober. You drink a little wine, you smoke a little weed or whatever. But I didn't think she was rocking with that, you know, with the hard. But I guess she still fuck with the pills and the powder. Maybe here and there dabbles. You know, after having a crazy relapse, they show her having a relapse, and that's kind of why you don't see the mother and the sister yet, because they had to cut her off, right? So anyway, so that starts the bond with Angel and Rue. You know, they kind of, they're not like in a relationship or even really, they just mess with each other a little bit, or they like each other. So Rue tells her, yeah, homegirl, she OD'd. Shouldn't have told Angel that. Angel, now she's really bugging. She's bugging out. She's starting to get high and be on the floor looking just, you know, zonked out. And when people try to check her, she's blacking out. So Alamo's like, yo, we're going to put her in rehab. Rue was surprised. Like, oh, I didn't know y'all had you know, she's like, rehab? Rehab's expensive. She's like, nah, we pay for rehab. Rue was like, wow, I didn't know y'all paid for that. You know, you did that. This is pretty cool. I guess she's still kind of looking at this spot like it's Google. So he's like, yo, if you take her to rehab, I might have a little promotion in it for you. So she's like, bet. So ultimately she winds up taking her to the rehab. They get to the rehab and you realize like this rehab, this almost might, this might be like a kill shelter for wayward strippers. You know what I'm saying? Like, it looked like something bad about to happen to this girl. It's dark and dank in there. Homegirl that's, you know, working the front desk is like, she ain't concerned with nothing. There is no, you know, let me see some ID, none of that. There's no forms to fill out. You know, listen, we knew you was coming. Alamo called ahead. You're a little late. Tell that lady we got somebody, you know, some big security guy takes her down a dark hall. And maybe never to be seen again. And Rue kind of, I think, at that point realizes, oh, shit, this might not be a good, this is something. This is like, this ain't everything it's shaped up to be. There's a lot of danger here, you know. So that's kind of that storyline as far as Rue and work. There's a little later on, we'll talk about it, Rue reunites with Jules. We'll talk about that in a second. But the other thing, Maddie rekindling with Cassie, right? You know, it opens up and it's talking about how Maddie, that's how it all opens up, actually. Maddie approaches her current boss while her boss was at lunch. Maddie just pitches herself for a job. The lady's like, I'm not even looking for nobody, but Maddie is insistent. This, I could do this. I won't be an HR nightmare. You ain't got to worry about me. I believe in capitalism. Listen, you know, her phone rings. Maddie picks up the phone, says, this is such and such's office, you know, that whole thing, and basically winds up getting hired. I want to say it's Miss Pensler. She winds up getting hired by the lady, and she becomes her assistant. And she's helping her with the talent. She's helping her with the with their lead client. I want to say it's Drew or whatever, the like one of the big influencers or whatever. So she's helping work. She's doing a thing with her. In the same time, COVID hits. And it's like, you know, we talked about before. It's like the boom of OnlyFans girls, right? So she finds one girl who's like putting up these videos, and she starts setting up shoots, and basically she's managing this young girl, you know, and she's doing, you know, she's doing some type of, she's doing content that isn't, you know, the most, you know, it's sexual content, right? And she actually hooks her up with, she hooks her up with Dylan Reed, who is like one of their prize content, one of the, that's the influencer, one of their prize clients. She sets them up to meet, you know, she's kind of basically trying to impress her and, you know, keep that relationship fruitful. The boss sees that it got picked up in a tabloid. The headline is, you know, Dylan Reed caught with porn star. The boss comes to the desk like, yo, you know who this woman is? She's like, yeah, she's not a porn star. She's like, you know, she's just does a little bit of OnlyFans. She does content. It's spicy, whatever, whatever. She's like, this cannot happen. Are you getting a commission off this girl? She's like, yo, you need to cut ties. Either you cut ties with her or we about to cut ties with you. So Maddie, you know, cuts the ties with homegirl. Listen, I can't be there like you deserve, blah, 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 basically. Breaks up with a client. Long story short, her client makes some bread. Now, she'd have stuck to, as they say, if she'd have stuck to her gut, she'd have been getting money. But now she stayed with a job and she's, you know, she's getting pieced off. Out the blue, Cassie reaches out to Maddie, right? And real talk, yo, I'm a big fan. I like Alexa Demi. She get busy. She holds the screen well. Like, she's good. She's good at Maddie. Like, it's one of my favorite characters. But anyway, so Cassie, you know, DMs Maddie out the blue. Instagram. You could tell they don't fuck with each other. You know, they fell out, obviously, over Nate. Right? So she's like, hey, I miss you. Wanted to see if we could get together. Blah, blah, blah. Maddie looks at her page. She see what she's doing. She tarting it up. Maddie like, I definitely could help take her to the next level. You know what I'm saying? And it seems as though Cassie must think that Maddie is getting it. Cassie's reaching out because she sees Maddie's proximity to Dylan Reed. So she's like, yo, he could help. She could help me. We should rekindle this relationship. So they wind up setting up a meet. They're going to go meet at a hotel or whatever like that. It's funny when Maddie is telling Rue about meeting up with Cassie, how she pantomimes, you know what I'm saying, some tits and crying. And so, oh, Cassie? Yeah, it's like little charades or whatever. Anyway, you know, Cassie pulls up to the little hotel, little pool at the hotel, some little boutique hotel, and Maddie's across the street. She sees her pull up. Maddie puts on a full show, full-on mink, you know what I'm saying? Big old Hollywood glasses, fronting like she's on a call. She's looking like success. She's looking like a ladder. You know what I mean? She pull up to her. Hold on 1 second. Yeah, so we're going to close that deal. It's going to be nothing. Da-da-da-da-da. I'll talk to you soon. All right, bad bees. Wow. Yo, Cassie is dazzled. She's enamored. Stars in the eyes like, wow, damn, Maddie is killing shit. I need this. So the initial front is like, yo, I just wanted to rekindle. I know things went left, you know, you, me, Nate, you know what I'm saying? I met my soulmate by losing my other soulmate and this, that, and the other thing, but we're getting married, so it must have been destiny. You know, it just kind of shows kind of how tone deaf and clueless Cassie is as a person. And Maddie is cool. She kind of playing it. She's slow walking it. They order some April spritzes, and there's a few rounds. You could tell, like, Maddie ain't really drinking. She on her poker shit. She want to see what's really good. 3N, Cassie is starting to talk about how frustrated she is in life and what she's trying to do and how she needs help. And basically, that's the whole reason she reached out. And Maddie's like, that's the reason she reached out? She was like, nah. I mean, it was about friendship, but, you know, I know you could help me. And Maddie is like, well, I'll see what I could do. She says, you know, I see some of your content. You know, I could tell you why you're not really excelling, like, you know, the comps in your field or whatever. You don't really have the taste. And she's like, well, what do you mean by taste? And she kind of breaks down some of her shit. She's like, some of the stuff that you're doing, the little dog move, like that little dog play and all of that, it just comes across desperate. You know, the outfits look a little too, yeah, it's camp, but it's corny. You need somebody to help curate your style, to help you, you know, and I could be that person. So she's like, yo, you open to doing nudity? Now, Cassie definitely told Nate she wasn't going to do nudity. That was the promise from last episode. She was like, I'm definitely open to it because she's thirsty. She's trying to pop. And I think she's like, she feels like she's wilting, you know, like she's not thriving. One thing about this show that I really think it captures so far, and I'm curious to see how it goes for the rest of this this season. Somebody else said it's just like it captures that moment after high school or even post-college, if you went to college, of that moment of, like, where you're so desperate to establish yourself in the world. You know, like, you're moving from a kid to an adult, and you want to create a big life for yourself or some type of life for yourself, and you don't really know exactly how to do it. All you got is, and you might have a lot of, like, you know, chutzpah or, you know, spirit or finesse or, like, just energy and availability and, like, you just ready to do whatever it takes. Like, there is something to be said about that youth, especially youth with no, I don't want to say no vision, but no real direction. No, like, you, it's like cracking open a video game and not reading the instructions, and you just playing and you'll figure it out. But that's kind of how it is. You just out here trying to make it happen, trying to get a high score in this bitch. So you see a lot of that. And you also see what happens is when you're young like that and you don't really have a feel for what you can, I don't want to say entitled to, but what you can negotiate or what you can earn or what, you know, you don't really have a point of reference for what's really available in the world for you, you could definitely be exploited on all levels. So there's various shades of exploitation happening to almost every character in this series. So Cassie's like, yeah, I'm down. I'll pose nude. It's nothing. Yeah, it's something. So anyway, we see Nate. Nate is leveraged out here. He's trying to make things happen. He owes one guy like $500,000. And it's about to be $600,000 in a week. So he's trying to finagle some funds. So he throws like a little mixer at the crib, trying to present himself as Big Willie, like he ain't got no money problems, and present a life and, you know, opportunity for his colleagues to make more money with him. All they need to do is throw some money. You know what I mean? I need like $100,000 or this, and that's light if you really trying to get it. And I'm telling you, this is a can't lose opportunity. He's over here trying to sell dreams, you know, because he need to make this money. And the one thing that's kind of undermining him, it has been discovered that Cassie out here, you know, with her whole ass out, you know, on the internet. And the people are whispering, you know, within the party. And then one girl comes up to Cassie, or Cassie divulges it to one of the girlfriends or the wives. She tells her partner. Her partner tells Nate. Nate calls Cassie in and confronts her about this. And Cassie's like, well, I need to make the money because you can't pay for these flowers. They're having a finances argument in front of the people. Now, these are the same people that they're trying to convince that they're not having money problems. And it's looking bad. So he gets her to concede to delete her account. He says, I'll pay for the flowers. Just delete that. Please delete it. Damage is already done. She comes back. She says, see, like, I guess deleted the account. I don't believe the account is deleted because I think more than them flowers, I think Cass wants her flowers, you know, in the figurative sense. Like, she wants to be an object of desire. She sees these other girls, and she felt like she's prettier than these other girls, and she felt like there's some money out there to get that, you know, just leveraging, you know, her look, you know. So boom. So to kind of keep peace in the home, she says, yo, I deleted it. And, you know, all is well somewhat until it's not, right? So that's that storyline. Right now, the other one is Jules and Rue coming back together, I guess. You know, I think Jules is like in the art world or something. I'm not sure, but she's also like a sugar baby. She's living in this penthouse. This guy's putting her up in. This married man is putting her up in. She brings Rue over. Rue kind of judges the situation, you know. And then, you know, like, Jules is a little defensive. Rue is like, well, after I hear all that, I feel like I still got a shot. And it's funny, again, this is similar to, like, the maturity of it all and that point in your life, post-high school, post-college, when you still have some type of bond with your first love and might still be the only love you've had, the love of your life, and y'all still have a deep connection, you know, and there's that dance and there's that effect that you have on each other. You know, like, Rue feel herself when she around Jules. Even as popping as Jules is and how appointed and how couture her gear looks and how fly this apartment that she's staying in, that this man is putting her up in, she still feels like, I know Jules better than this dude, right? And she get a little cocky, you know? And she feel herself. And Jules puts up a bit of a, like, a front. But at the same time, they doing a dance. Because it's almost like she letting Rue lead a little bit. But she like Rue and she like the attention. And she miss her too. So, you know, they wind up, you know, looks like they wind up taking a bath together. And they gonna jump off. Almost like a relapse, in a sense. You know what I'm saying? Like, sometimes when you're trying to move forward and it's uncertain or it's taking too long, back to the whole momentum faith conversation we had earlier, like, if it's like, if things ain't clicking the way you want it to click or you're feeling lonely along the path, it's easy to go back, you know what I mean, to dig in the crates and find them people that made you feel great at one point. And it's not always the best thing to do. And, like, when I see Rue with Jules, I don't like seeing it. It's almost like I said, it's like a relapse. It's like, yo, you don't need to do that. Because it's not gonna work out the way you want it to work out. And I think she is one of the few people that could truly unravel Rue. And, you know, I'm always rooting for Rue, you know. But overall, man, I'm feeling it. I'm enjoying it. Two episodes in, I'm enjoying it. I have not watch DTF St. Louis yet. I'm hearing that Beef 2, season 2 is fire. Supposedly, the media, everybody's like, it's the best series, it's the best TV show of the whole year. Meanwhile, it's April. It's the best TV show of the whole year that says this is killing whatever White Lotus was trying to do. They are eviscerating the 1%. I gotta check it out. I'm not trying to get caught up in the hype, but I did like season 1. And if it's good, I'm excited about it. So I'm gonna get to that at some point. Maybe I'll talk about it on the mic. But that was it. Let me know what you think. Y'all watching Euphoria? You feeling it? How you feel about it? Blah, blah, blah. What else are you watching? Again, I might try to catch DTF, but it's over. And, you know, that conversation might have passed on, but, you know. That's it. that is it. That's it for the week. You know, that's it. That's the conversation. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. That is all. I might have some spots this weekend. If so, lock into the stories, dlemoncomedy.com. I'll pop up on that. But until next week, as always, tell a friend to tell a friend. And even an enemy to get in the conversation. I'm out.